Hey everybody, this is Jamie from Explain It to Jamie. I'm getting at you real quick here, just before the episode starts. It's such a good episode, guys. It's so good, so exciting, and I promise we'll get to it real quick. I just really fast have to plug a couple things. One is our website. We got a brand new website. Check it out. Like, share, subscribe. We're on YouTube, we're on SoundCloud, and of course we are on Patreon. There will be more about that at the end of the episode, as well as a bonus little piece of our bonus content that you get from being a Patreon subscriber. So be sure to stick around all the way to the end. I won't waste any more of your time. Please enjoy the episode and stay in contact, stay active. Until next time, or until a couple seconds from now, I'm Jamie. Hey, ding-dongs, I'm Jamie.
I'm Richard.
And this is Explain It to Jamie, the political comedy podcast in which I, Jamie, a politically innocent fella from Toronto, Canada, have the political happenings of the world explained to me in terms I can understand by my politically savvy friend, Richard Lamb.
That's me.
How's it going, brother?
Great. I'm super excited to spend another day explaining politics to you in a series of Rick and Morty and 80s movie references.
I can't wait, my friend. It's the best part of my week. Yeah.
And the best part of my week is the fact that we're not actually alone, just you and I today, but what? We have a special guest for this episode.
Huh?
That's right. I believe it is the current front runner for podcast appearances, the OG fact checker himself, Mr. Anthony McMahon.
What?
In the spirit of today's episode, I'm going to say, folks, hey there, folks.
Folks. How's it going, buddy?
Butterino?
Brotherino?
I'm doing okay. It's a little warm in this closet.
Oh man, but, you are telling me. I wore my my sweater because it's getting cold outside.
You know, guys, having citizens of Toronto eschew big fancy recording studios and record on their own dime in a closet is exactly what Rob Ford would have wanted us to be doing. We are honoring his legacy.
It's true.
Yeah,
it's
we're
true.
Also honoring his legacy by showing up late to all theater shows that we show up to.
And fancy you should mention Rob Ford, because that leads us to today's episode.
That's right. Do 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 do
do do do do do do do do do do do do do. Anthony just looked at me with a look of sheer terror as I threw to him. Yeah. We're talking about Doug.
Yeah, for those of you who aren't destroyed older millennials, that was the TV show to the 90s cartoon show, Doug.
Yeah, Doug Ford, of course, is who we're talking about. Not Mr. Funny, although we're going to do our best to make him funny today.
I mean, there's a lot about him that's like kind of comedic.
Sure. Yeah. I at full admission, I do not know much about Doug Ford. I followed the Rob Ford thing kind of, you know, as the
entire world.
Yeah.
Did.
As the entire world did, you know, but I don't know much about Doug
Ford. Yeah. For those of you who are listening from outside Ontario or outside of Canada, Doug Ford is the current premier of Ontario, which is like the equivalent to a governor in the United States. He's the head of our province. He's the brother to the infamous crack mayor of Toronto, Rob Ford. And he's been a very busy boy. And, you know, in a more innocent time, the Rob Ford thing was really, really out there for a North American major politician, and his behavior was really out there. Of course, now we have Donald Trump doing the, like, gritty reboot of the Doug Ford saga on the world stage. So, I mean, it seems like a quainter and more innocent time to kind of think about it, but that's kind of what we're going to be unpacking today. Like, Doug, Rob...
What is it? What's the sordid tale of
you know, illicit substances and drunken rants and
a
successful local label making business.
Yeah.
What it's like to have a province run entirely by large sons.
Yeah, literal large sons and large nephews. Let's not forget Michael Ford himself.
Yes. Let's say we skip the chit-chat and hop right into this motherfucking theme song.
I say, let's print the label that says, theme song!
Slap it on, baby! Yeah, beautiful. So, Dougie Doug Ford.
Yeah, so Jamie, what do you know about Doug Ford?
Okay, as far as I know, him and his brother are the like spawn of Miss Piggy and a cartoon American. You know what I mean? Like just someone who loves football, beer, and punching other people. I don't know that to be true. That's just like what the sort of lens that I get him and his brother through the news. Yeah, just sort of two dudes, two bros who always had money and still do, and they wanted football and they still do, and yeah. They now run a province. Well, one of them does. R.I.P.
Yeah, Rob is dead. Yeah. Rob is dead, and Doug runs a province.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's not a terrible place to start, frankly.
Yeah. Here's the thing I worry about, is that we can get more into this, but, like, you know, with the Donald Trumps of the world, are we too quick sometimes to, like, equate people to that? You know what I mean? Well, I mean, this is totally a question right out in front of the sleigh.
Right.
But, like, yeah, I don't know. I hear a lot of shit about Doug Ford. It's not that I don't necessarily agree with it. But I
honestly think that, like, with Rob Ford and, you know, I think you could say Doug Ford, who is, like, kind of absorbed Rob Ford's momentum and political base and goodwill in Ontario.
Yeah.
Like, they're actually
all that goodwill that Rob Ford built. Goodwill.
This is kind of one of the things we'll talk about. Like, if you're in Ontario or even in Canada, you've probably heard this term Ford Nation like a million times, which refers to like the people who vote for the Fords and have been voting for them for like basically 20 years at this point, 18 years,
mm-hmm.
or even earlier if you count their dad. And they're real. They're real people who love the Fords.
Yeah. Like,
and I actually think that the Fords are better at doing what Donald Trump is doing than Donald Trump is at doing it. Like, I would say that they're better at being populist than Donald Trump is. Like, America's so broken that Donald Trump could basically do anything, and it kind of plays at this point.
Like, right.
Yeah.
Maybe that's too much of a question ahead of any actual information. I'm just aware of how much like bias I receive in that direction, and I want you guys to know that I'm going to be curious about that gray area
for sure.
So who are these guys? They own a label company or whatever.
I mean, that's true. So the Ford family is from Etobicoke, which is a suburb of Toronto, like just outside what we call Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
They come from a pretty like wealthy part of Etobicoke. Their dad, Doug Sr.,
mm-hmm.
Started a label company called Deco Labels and Tags, which makes literally like all labels, like anything that has a label, they'll make a label for it. It turns out that's a pretty lucrative business, and they did well at it.
Sure. It's like the guy that makes the YYZ zippers or whatever. It's the one brand of zipper that is literally
and
everything.
And that's the guy's initials.
Yeah.
YYK.
Or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's just like that. Except, yeah, that's right. It's like you just corner the market for everything that needs a zipper. It's like a lot of stuff needs labels.
Yeah.
And there's always labels to print. It's like, it sounds preposterously boring, but it's a business that's done them very well.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, they come from a lot of money. It's been described as like not private plane money, but like family property in Florida and 3 months of vacation a year money. So,
yeah.
You know.
I think it like at its peak, it was maybe $25, $30 million a year. So it's like big money, but not, you know, estate empire money kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right.
They're not like, they don't own the moon like Jeff Bezos does or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, did he do that?
Yeah, it's his now.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
It's Amazon's new HQ, actually.
HQ
on the
too.
Moon.
Yeah. Aren't the Russians are going to the moon.
Are they? There's like a Russian moon.
They're going to the moon, and they're going to, quote unquote, verify the American moon landing.
like, we're going to make sure the moon's here.
Yeah,
if they faked it in Hollywood, this is the moment. We're going to find out.
Or at least that's the clickbait that whatever like news agency put that on my phone.
I think that's going to be really good for everyone's brains when they find out that it was fake all along.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly. People are going to trust the media
a lot more. Can you imagine? Oh, my God. That would be it. That'd be the cat. That'd be the bullet in Archduke Ferdinand.
What if they, like, get up to the moon and they find like an abandoned movie studio, so like they had to like they went to the moon but the moon like didn't look sexy enough, so they had to build a fake moon but they were on the actual moon,
kind of
like Iwo Jima.
That'd be fantastic. Let's just do a podcast about the moon, guys.
Let's just muse about the moon.
What's the deal with the moon?
I'm told that when it hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Never verified.
Yeah. Okay, so the Fords, they come from Etobicoke, label company. They're pretty rich.
They're into football.
Doug and Rob both played high school football as teenagers. Okay, so I'll take this moment to say, in researching this episode, I performed an immeasurable public service to all of you and read a large chunk of the book Doug Ford wrote about him and Rob Ford. So I'm dead now and I'm a ghost and you're fucking welcome. And I also read a good chunk of the book written by Rob Ford's former chief of staff as a kind of like second account of what happened. And I refreshed myself on a bunch of the very good investigative reporting done by the Globe and Mail and the Toronto Star when Rob was mayor and kind of now in Doug's run up to power as well.
Right.
So Doug Ford's book is fucking crazy, you guys. He's listed as it's not really clear who's the author. It says Rob Ford and Doug Ford, but then like the first thing Doug Ford writes in the book is that Rob was too sick to help with the book. So in theory, it's just Doug writing it. But I refuse to believe Doug actually wrote this book. It seems like he just dictated it out loud to somebody who like cleaned it up, but there's no like ghostwriter listed. There is a ghostwriter listed or like a second writer on the chief of staff guy's book.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so one of the like weird recurring themes, I should say, too, this book was written by Doug Ford before he became the leader of the PC party, clearly in a groundwork laying effort to transfer all of like Rob's fans' goodwill onto Doug.
Right.
So it's like designed to like really make him and Rob look like they were super, super tight, which, you know, they're brothers and they worked together. So they obviously were. But it's designed to kind of like put him in the room where it happened for many of the biggest moments of Rob's life. But even still, even though this is clearly the point of the book is to like make Doug and Rob look like a really tight unit, Doug like can't resist like weird one-upmanship over Rob. So like they were football players in high school. This is where this is all coming from. And there's this thing that happened to Rob where when he was in his junior year at school, he was on like the junior football. Sorry, he was in his first year at school. He was in the junior football team. His Etobicoke team, went like 1-5 or like they had a losing record in the regular season, but then like had this crazy come from behind playoff one run and won like the championship.
Wow.
It was like a big football story. And in the book, Doug's like, well, while Rob's team did win the championship, it was actually my team that was better in terms of the overall talent of the players. Right? Like, just can't resist pissing on this huge achievement that Rob Ford had.
He's the older brother, baby.
I know. And that kind of, like, should tell you something about his character, honestly.
Yeah,
like,
he can't.
His brother was dead when he wrote this book, basically.
Well,
and he couldn't resist giving him that one, you know?
Now, when I picture the two of them, I often sort of picture them as like a more cartoony, dumber version of George and Jeb Bush, where one of them sort of had political talent and the other one was a bit of a dummy who just, you know, meandered his way through it.
I would say both of them have more talent than Jeb Bush has fucking ever had in his entire life. Like, yeah, Jeb Bush could lick those fucking dudes' boots.
Yeah. Wow, okay, great. I didn't know that.
Yeah, Rob is, Rob was beloved by people. I mean, he was hated by many, many, many people as well. But there's, like, he had an undeniable talent for like one-on-one personal relations with people, which is actually something that makes him similar to George W. Bush. This is something an anecdote that I always heard about W. is like, if you actually met him, he was like really engaging and really made you feel special and listened to.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I can tell, Rob was like even more dedicated to that kind of thing, like to an almost crazy point. I mean,
could call him.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah.
His former chief of staff says it was almost like an addiction. Like, he was addicted to people's kind of, like, love and appreciation. But he would, like, you couldn't just call him. Like, if you called him when he was a city councilor for 10 years from 2000 to 2010, and then the mayor for 4, and if you called his office, he would, like, personally call you back and often, like, personally go to your house and, you know, if you had a tree that needed getting removed by the city, like, he'd make sure it happened. Like, and he was like incredibly insistent and obsessive about doing that work and did that work over such a long period of time that he built a legitimate, huge following of people who loved him and would, like, you know, compared to their experience with any other politician anywhere, here was a guy who like showed up for them, treated them like someone with dignity, and really tried to do everything to come through for them. And not just, and really made them feel like he did everything to come through for them, even when he probably couldn't do anything.
Right. Hmm, interesting.
And I think that's something that you can't ignore. It's something that I think often gets ignored when people like rip on the Fords. But, like, that work got done by them. That's something that they legitimately did. Now, what they chose to do with that power is a very different story.
But yeah. Right. I think it's for, like, Western Canadian listeners, who might be some of the listeners to this, because all of us come vaguely from the West.
Yes.
Probably one of the best corollaries is Ralph Klein from Alberta, right?
Yeah, kinda,
you know,
even down to the alcoholism.
yeah, exactly. But the huge part of it is, it's like, it's not just populism. That's kind of like a vague and vacuous word a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. What it is, it's retail politics. You get to know your politician. You get to shake hands with them. You feel like they did something for you.
Yeah.
And I mean, with Klein, it was the Klein bucks. And with Rob, it was the $60 back for your vehicle registration tax, right?
Yes.
So, like, these guys have built up these followings by giving people, a service in politics, which a lot of more technocratic politicians never really do.
Mm. Yeah. And not just that, they really, like, literally think of politics as, like, a customer interaction, right? They come from this, like, business world of this label company, and they, literally refer to it as, like, customer service is what the government should offer, and, like, you know, customer excellence, which is, like, seems, again, and one of their other things is, like, it's the common sense revolution, but it's, like, okay, sure, these are all ideas that make sense, but should the government work like that, actually?
Right.
Like, is that good?
Yeah.
And that level of thinking is where everything explodes. You know what I mean? It's like, it's in the jump from, like, hey, because running a label company works like this, also we can definitely quibble about how well they run their label company.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, because running a label company works like this, the government should also work like this. And that's not necessarily true immediately.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very easy to start poking holes in that logic.
Sure. On our football team, we did this and we won the championship. Maybe if we do this in our municipal government, we'll
exactly.
do the same thing.
I think one of the main things to think about for both Fords, Doug and Rob both, is that they're extreme. I think they're fundamentally destructive people. Their talent is in destruction. They successfully cut tons of stuff, but every significant thing they ever tried to make completely failed on them. They're
right.
terrible at making things.
Hmm.
They're incredible at destroying things. you know, and like that's an interesting dynamic about who they are and what they appeal to in society and what they're able to do.
Now, but isn't this sort of the great tug of war of government, though, like between conservative and more liberal governments? Is like one is pro cutting and one is pro spending. Like, isn't that sort of like how much? I want to be careful with being fair of how I phrase questions, but like, is Doug Ford a worse conservative than most other conservatives for cutting? You know what I mean? Is he more brutalist in that way, or are his policies just sort of general Canadian conservatism?
It appears that the only political idea that Doug Ford actually understands is cutting things. Like, I would say he could not answer a basic quiz on global warming.
Right.
I'd say he could probably not answer a basic quiz on many aspects of our government. He's a sharp guy and a good one. Again, he's a much more slick kind of guy than Rob ever was. But it seems to me that the only consistent ideological thing in their entire time in governance, both of them, is cutting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's to an extent that is, I think, almost like religious fundamentalism.
Mm-hmm.
They're obsessed with reducing the amount of waste in the government.
That was, you used the phrase common sense revolution, and that was what Mike Harris, the previous conservative premier, ran on in 1995, and like literally it was, we're going to cut one third of government expenditures, which was a huge change from what the big blue machine, the old PC government was, which was about trying to make deals across the aisle, trying to, you know, get a lot of consultation before you made any changes. They ran the province for 41 years, and then there was a series of slightly more progressive governments, and then the common sense revolution came in, and number one was, we're going to cut everything.
Right.
And that's when their dad was elected as well. So that's kind of the politics that they came up under.
Right.
Which is good to note.
Yeah, their dad was a Mike Harris progressive conservative MP for just one term.
Right. So what are the things that... So, okay, well, let's back up. So they have this label company. There are these brothers. There's this one-upmanship. And Doug Ford has more or less successfully co-opted the Rob Ford base.
Yeah.
And he wins premiership, right?
Yeah. That's
so what was that election like?
It was a fucking massacre. The conservative Progressive Conservative Party in Ontario did virtually everything they could to lose the election before Rob Ford was the leader. It already seems like bizarrely ancient history, but for a while their leader was this guy Patrick Brown. That was the leader that they chose, and he was mired in like some pretty terrible sexual harassment scandals, and eventually ended up resigning as leader. After he resigned, they had to have another leadership race, and Doug Ford took over. And he kind of like coasted to power on a huge amount of resentment about the provincial Liberals who have been governing the party for 18 years or something like that. Yeah, the Kathleen Wynne Liberals, who really, really were not doing a good job at the end of their time because they were sort of like pleasing no one. They were I got the impression just following at a normal like reading the news level that they couldn't do anything that was progressive because they didn't want to alienate the people to the right. But then they also couldn't do anything too far to the right because they didn't want to alienate the people to the left. And they just got locked in and trapped. Right. They couldn't do anything and they didn't stand for anything. And they also kind of like got painted with all the failures that happened under their, 18 years is a long time to be in government and you can blame somebody for a lot after 18 years.
Totally.
And so it was just like one of those nuclear elections where the Liberals were going down hard and the PCs kind of emerged. Emerge as the stronger brand in the wake of that.
So let's get into like specifically why is Doug Ford so criticized? Like why is he more criticized than any, like again, I bring it back. Would he be more criticized than another conservative leader?
Yeah, I would say absolutely yes.
Yeah.
Doug Ford basically campaigned on nothing. He gave virtually no promises of any kind. He didn't even release a real budget during the campaign, I don't think. Right?
No, they had, I think, a one-page platform with a few slogans in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he didn't release any real thoughts during his campaigning for the leadership of the party either.
Right.
And was seen as a big dark horse candidate. And a lot of people think that he only won because a huge group of social conservatives joined the party and voted for him as their second choice.
They had this other woman named Tanya Granick Allen as their kind of like main front runner. And she's
Tiny?
Tanya.
Oh, okay.
Tanya Granick Allen.
Tiny Granick Allen.
She's the one who's...
Tiny Granule Adam. Yeah.
Which is hopefully what she'll be reduced to if there was any justice in the world. No, she's the one who has been back in the news lately for proposing the PC party like resolution to be debated about rejecting gender theory as a liberal ideology. That's her handiwork at
sure,
work.
Sure, sure.
So, yeah, so a bunch of people had joined up and kind of got behind Doug after Tanya Granick Allen had kind of bowed out.
Mm.
Yeah. And not to make too many Donald Trump comparisons, but the big one there is that the conservatives have this really, really complicated system of how you become the leader. And Doug Ford not only lost the popular vote, but also lost technically their electoral college, but still managed to get more points somehow and came out in the lead. So it was the most like confusing election when they were trying to explain how he lost two different parameters of the election and still won.
Wow. Yeah.
That's nuts. I didn't know that, actually. Yeah. That's crazy.
Wow, that's so wild.
So the reason he's so heavily criticized is because he didn't actually promise anything.
Right.
Nobody knew what he was going to do. And then what he's actually done is a series of... Well, like the things that he's been the most heavily criticized for are things that seem vindictive and insane and petty and wasteful.
Uh-huh.
And they just seem they again, so like I said, I don't think that the Fords truly understand anything about governance other than waste. And they don't see anything except in terms of waste and efficiency. They grew up incredibly privileged and they have worked. They both worked like blue collar jobs at different points, like in high school or whatever. But they're incredibly privileged people who I don't think fundamentally... I think they see everything as a customer service interaction, right? So they claim they're not racist and not homophobic, even though Rob said the idea of gay sex creeped him out, his literal words.
Right.
They said, like, if you call me up and ask for help, I'll help you no matter what blah, blah, what race, what religion, blah, 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 you are. And I think that that is probably true in the sense that it's like if you walk into Deco Labels and Tags and you pay for something, you'll get it. Like, that's what they think not being racist is.
Right, right, right.
But in truth, they're not actually able to understand like a different person's experience of the world and how the government might actually need to aid that person in their experience of the world.
Right.
Okay.
Right. They have a pretty firm definition and it's not open to nuance.
Yeah. And like, a classic example of this is, like, one of the things that people are really pissed off about, and this is the cause today of a lot of drama, is that Doug Ford has, like, really slashed the French language services in Ontario. Mm. Like, really cut deep into them. And there's a lot of pushback already over that within his own caucus and stuff like that. Because, and I think, truly, he saw it as a matter of waste. Mm. It's like, we speak English here, you know. Why do we need to have these things? They are unnecessary. When in fact, like, these things are symbolically important, historically important. And, you know, the French community in Ontario is very invisible and somewhat underserved. Mm-hmm. And certainly to them, they felt super attacked. It was, like, really militant, intense, and focused response against this, right? Mm-hmm. One of the other truly insane things that Doug Ford did, the Liberal government before him had completed a wind farm that was literally sitting complete, ready to be turned on, and he canceled it immediately upon entering office, which is, like, a huge fucking waste of resources,
yeah.
Like, not cost efficient. It's, like, pissing on this project that had been built. And I think that that's because he literally, if there's one thing we can be sure of, it's that he acts and behaves as somebody who does not believe climate change is an imminent problem at all.
Right.
He has no respect for its solutions. He has no plan for undoing it. It's going to be, like, incredibly regressive government on climate change. Like, and not just regressive to the point where it's like, oh, sure, we're going to pretend we're finding a solution. We're just going to stall things so that our business people can keep getting paid. It's like, we're going to not turn on the wind farm and we're going to cancel it. It's done. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's right there.
Yeah, yeah.
You could easily, in fact, take credit for it.
Right.
You know, with fucking Ford Nation.
Sure.
But no, they don't, like, they're not doing that.
Interesting. Yeah. Didn't he reassign some, like, environmental people to, like, some environmental, like, looking after the forest? Fucking, if this is your first time listening to this podcast, and you're like, it sounds like one person in that closet doesn't fully understand. You're that's overestimating the mandate. My ability. Yeah. Wasn't there
Ontario's,
big green space?
Ontario's bunch of motherfuckers who look after the forest ministry has been devastating.
Yeah. I think there was a lot of problems around changing the rhetoric of what the different departments were called. So the department of, I think it was the department of women and gender or something like that. And then now it's the department of women's issues. And then there was another one that was
department of women's stupid complaints.
The department of God damn it, Jenny, I'll take out the garbage when the show's over.
And there was department of Indigenous Affairs and Reconciliation, which is now called the Department of Indigenous Affairs and Mines. and then I think it was, environment and climate change is now trees and parks or something like that.
Right. Yeah, I think this is what I was talking about.
The Department of Climate Change is now the Department of Trees and Parks.
Yeah. See you guys. I'm not such an idiot.
It's true.
It is the Department of people looking after the woods.
The other big thing Doug Ford has done that was huge is he reduced the size of the Toronto City Council by almost half.
Yeah.
Right before the Toronto City election.
Right.
Halfway through the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a big deal.
Well, I imagine that goes hand in hand with his, like, waist cutting.
It's actually something that him and Rob had championed for quite a long time. Like, they tried to do it in city council and were just, like, ruthlessly demolished. They proposed many things that they were ruthlessly demolished on, and this was absolutely one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually something he also wrote in his book again several months ago, but he never explicitly campaigned on it as a promise. He never, like, basically, the people who voted for him. If you had held a gun to their heads on the day of the election and were like, what's Doug Ford's, like, plan for the city council? None of them would have been able to tell you, right? And this is part of why people think he's quite disingenuous and quite dangerous, right? It's because it's like, this was a huge, they claim it to be a cost-cutting measure. Like, by reducing the amount of city councilors by half, it's going to, like, massively make the mayor more powerful, which is what they want. And it's going to, like, make everyone, spend less money. It saves everyone who lives in Toronto $2 a year. And it means that all your city councilors now have to do twice as much work. So there's no evidence that it's going to help anything. It saves everyone $2 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like people have been thinking of it as, like, petty and vindictive. And I think it is those things. It is also a thing that they've been campaigning on for a long time. Or attempting to do for a long time. Not campaigning on it explicitly.
Right. And what now, I've also heard a lot of talk about his, like, gender and his policies on gender, sexuality, that sort of stuff. And I know that when we chatted with Stephanie Baptiste last season, our sex and sex education lady, she was talking about how her job might be in trouble. Should Doug Ford be elected? And yes. I understand that all that has sort of come to pass.
So one of the only things that he actually said anything meaningful about at all was we talked about this with Steph Baptiste last season. You should listen to those episodes on sex. The Ontario government under the Liberals, the previous government, had done a huge overhaul of their sex ed system with like tons of consultations, tons of input. It was considered one of the best, most rigorous, and most comprehensive sex ed systems in the world. Mm. And Doug Ford there has basically been a fear campaign against this sex ed system for the last several years on the part of the progressive conservatives. And Doug Ford, basically that was his only concrete policy platform, was like getting rid of the sex ed thing. And there was lots of misinformation about it, you know, like from stuff like kids in kindergarten are getting taught to be trans, like is the kind of shit you would hear in this kind of debate, which is obviously not true. It was it had updated the curriculum to include online, you know, content about online and online activity, you know, sharing photos and what that means. Consent was like a big kind of ongoing part of education that was like developed upon as you went through school, and all of that got reverted to like the 1998 sex ed curriculum, which was the last time it had been updated. They just cut it back. Now since then there has been a lot of protest and they've slowly walked it back a little bit, so I think it includes a pretty decent chunk of the old curriculum now, but at this point it's all hot air, right? It's not sure what is actually going to end up being what, right?
Yeah, so they're still working on interim curriculums, right? And this is one of the things that, going back to the leadership, this woman, Tanya Granick-Allen, got, I think, a few thousand people to sign up. And in one of the first debates, she said something like, kids are failing math class because they're thinking about anal sex, because they're being taught that. And so every one of the debaters...
I've got news for her. Long before this fucking sex ed curriculum, I was failing math class because I was thinking of anal sex, and nobody ever fucking talked to me about it.
Yeah, it's true, but you're supposed to keep that inside.
That's right, just bury it deep inside.
Yeah, take it out on someone 30 years later.
Put a soulless look in your eyes and just show up to your label company every day.
Yeah, know that you got an A in math class.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
Zeros and ones look like buttholes and penises. Don't at me.
Crazy. So, I mean, from what it sounds like they've been making pretty aggressive moves, but also sounds like there's also been a lot of backpedaling. Yeah, on the Francophone issue, on the sex education issue.
Yeah, they also canceled the $15 minimum wage increase, which was a big one that they just did this week. I was in the provincial legislature yelling and getting kicked out. And that was a kind of devastating blow for people, too. Also, not something that they had hinted about it. They hadn't, but they were scared to actually promise it because it's unpopular with a lot of people who voted for them, who are like pretty demographically diverse in some places. Mm-hmm. They walked back that. They walked back all these like rules about getting paid sick days and stuff that everyone was supposed to get guaranteed. Those are all gone now. They replaced them with a bunch of weirdly specific unpaid sick days. So like it used to be like you got 10 days of leave that you could use as you needed to and 2 guaranteed paid sick days. And now it's like you get 3 days for like sickness unpaid, you get 3 days for family emergencies, and you get 2 days for like you know, seeing a cloud that scares you or something. It's like they're all like weirdly specific.
And if you miss a day for being sick, you have to put in a 16-hour day when you return
at Deco labels and tags.
Yeah.
Specifically, yeah. But it's funny, like it's really funny, like. They have such a weird idea of what people are like. Like they're obsessed with their own image of going out and helping people and getting to know people one-on-one and caring about people. But they also like over and over, like Doug Ford writes this anecdote in this book where his dad, when he was like, when they were kids, like young teenagers, I think, their dad took them on this like trip of Asia, looking at like different label factories in Asia and like learning about the Asian. They're like, our dad always admired the Asian work ethic,
right?
Which is like a weird thing to say in a book, but you know, let's just go with it.
Sure.
And they were in Taiwan, and they were literally like seeing these like poor rural factory workers making machines that make labels to send around the world. Like, these people were so overworked that they would fall asleep at their, like, station and wake up and keep working. And Doug Ford thought that was a good thing. Like, he's repeatedly said, like, man, like, it always really stuck with me how hard those Asians work. They fall asleep, like, they slept at their machines and then woke up and kept working. And it's like, it never occurred to him that maybe those people didn't want to be doing that, but were forced to. You know, like, this says a lot about this man's mind, I think. It's more the fact that he so unselfconsciously shares this story, thinking it doesn't reflect on him at all.
Right, right. That's so interesting. It seems to be like this this common thing now where like my big frustration with people is that they can't see the world beyond what their parents taught them.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like they can't see, beyond the 18 years in which they were sort of raised in their formative years, they can't see beyond that bubble and that... Yeah, it's like impenetrable for some people.
This is literally the best possible lens with which to view Doug Ford. I think it's the most accurate, and it's one that where he's not just a stupid villain. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's like going to be very destructive for the province because he does not have the large-scale frame of reference to govern a province with many different people living in it. He only knows how to do one thing, and that's cut spending. Even then, you know, it's a bit... Like him and his brother were famously anti-Pride Parade, or rather anti the government funding the Pride Parade when they were in the Toronto City Council, because they didn't believe the government should fund a parade.
Right.
Even though the Pride Parade, you know, is a massive economic generator and engine for Toronto. So even if, and I mean, that shouldn't justify the Pride Parade's existence, in my opinion, but even if you're conservative... There's clear cost-benefit analysis in funding the Pride Parade.
Yeah.
And it's also an easy way to say that you're not anti-gay when, you know, many of your policies might harm anti-gay people and you have to get into bed with people who are explicitly anti-gay, so to speak, in order to hold up your political coalition. Mm-hmm. They just, like, couldn't understand that the Pride Parade was, like, an important cultural activity for a marginalized community that has fought for representation through their entire lives. Like they that's not valid to them. They don't get it.
Right. You know? Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Well, yeah. This sheds more light. Is there anything else you guys, this is all I can think of that I've like is a fragment of what I've heard about these guys. I feel like I know more.
There's more stuff coming out. And this is the problem with not putting out a platform and not having a lot of consultations. They've been accused of not having a lot of transparency in the government. So there's a guy named, I think his name is Dean French. He's the party president.
Right. And he's kind of say that they can't say the same for their hair. That shit is like see-through.
It is thin. Yeah. It is like, they have found efficiencies in their hair.
I saw Doug Ford the day before he got elected. I was going to the Blue Jays game and he was there shaking hands and fuck me, does he look like a wax dummy of himself.
Yeah.
The hair is not just like thin, it is like gelled to within an inch of its goddamn life.
It's like Guy Fieri had a baby with a tomato.
yeah. But like one of those weird heirloom tomatoes, it's like not the normal color.
Yeah.
A lot more bumps than a greenhouse tomato.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you though. But you were talking about them being criticized for not being very transparent.
Yeah, so there was a, you know, kind of going with their very pro-business ideology. They're very, you know, cutting government, cutting spending, cutting the public ownership of anything. There's already been a commission put together to talk about like uploading and making efficiencies in the subway system. So there's a lot of worry that they're going to be selling off the entire subway system, which the province doesn't actually own. The city owns, but the province, because it owns the city, can just upload unilaterally and then privatize.
The Fords also, this was one of the ways they cut spending, is by privatizing everything. It's just like selling everything off to whoever would buy it.
One of their other great projects was to try and turn Ontario Place, the old, like, I think it was an old science center, and then it was an activity center. And
Anthony and I once, we were trying to get to a ferry dock at the waterfront, and we got lost and literally walked over the entire length of it, being forced to climb, like, multiple fences.
we were sliding guitars through, like, grates and stuff like that. It was a mess. But they want to take that, sell it, and turn it into a casino and maybe a Ferris wheel.
This is what I say Doug Ford is a terrible creator. Like one of his first things he proposed in city council was this idea of like this mega development along the waterfront, which included Ontario Place becoming like a casino with the world's largest Ferris wheel designed to rival like the London Eye.
Right.
And then it would have like an above ground train that ran all along the waterfront to a mega mall on the other side of downtown. which if you just like think about it for a bit, would probably make the waterfront really look like shit. Right, all of those things combined would be sort of terrible.
Yeah.
And it's like what people like about the waterfront, which is that you can like walk along it,
look at the water,
sit down, you know, sit on a beach chair, you know, like in like lick an ice cream. Like none of those things are a feature of Doug Ford's thing. Anyway, it got obliterated in the city council. And now it seems that he's sort of like vindictively just trying to create that plan.
Yeah, they've already taken the entire, I think, Ontario Place board and wound it up into one person whose job is to terminate the board so that the ownership of it goes towards the province again. And then just yesterday, 2 days ago, we're recording this on Saturday, the Hearn Power Generation Station, which was an old coal plant that was on the waterfront, about 40 acres, was sold to a guy who he had been leasing it as a studio for about 20 years. He started leasing it under the Mike Harris government. He was also the largest single donor to the Mike Harris government. And then he became the largest donor to the Rob Ford mayoral campaign and the largest donor to the Doug Ford leadership election campaign, and managed to buy this 40-acre power station for $300,000-$400,000 an acre on prime waterfront
for
land.
$16 million.
Yeah.
He sold waterfront, downtown waterfront land, like literally, but like closer to downtown than the beaches are.
Right.
Downtown waterfront land for 40 acres for $16 million. Think of how many houses $16 million would buy in Toronto. Like four.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And there's a lot of justification around that because it's a coal plant, not exactly great land, a lot of brown coal there.
It's called like brown land. So it's like polluted land that's not usable immediately. You have to put some effort into cleaning it, but it's still like...
There was never a request for proposals.
Got to tear it down, build new shit.
Sure.
Yeah, but there was never a single act of transparency. It was sold like in the middle of the night without anyone knowing about it.
Right. They didn't even like put it up for auction.
Yeah, no one got a chance to bid. There was no independent audit of how much it might be worth, so...
You know, think about it. If you're the city of Toronto, that's land that you want to develop. You can, like, employ a bunch of people cleaning it up and working on it.
Hell yeah.
And then you end up with this, like, possibly, like, huge feature waterfront area for the people of Toronto to enjoy. Instead, now it's going to be a 40-acre statue of Mussolini.
Yeah, I forgot to mention, the guy who bought it also, like, he ran for the Italian Fascist Party in the overseas Senate elections.
Is that what it's called, or is that what it's...
I think it's the Northern League. I believe that's what it is. La Liga Nord. And he ran for them and did not succeed. And they're pretty openly... there's a huge constituent of the Northern League who are... big appreciators of Benito Mussolini. So it's not like I'm using a slur.
Right.
I think they're pretty happy to use that word.
Yeah, I feel like we did something with him in the 40s. I can't remember exactly what it was. Like maybe somebody can write me and remind me of what our relationship to Mussolini was in the mid-20th century.
Didn't we sell him the Eaton Center for
$4 million? Yeah, that's right. And that's why the subways to the Eaton Center always run on time.
Yeah. Guys, how do you feel? Do you have anything else burning inside you? Is there something else that you're like, I got to get this on the record?
I think that Doug and Rob Ford's popularity should be carefully paid attention to by absolutely everyone who's interested in politics. Mm-hmm. Because, again, I cannot overstate this. The work that they put into making people know who they are, relating to them personally, and make them feel like somebody in the government was like truly working for them and cared about them was clearly effective. And I don't think most politicians are not as good at it as they were.
Right.
And there's a real lesson there for like how to win people on side, how to create those relationships. Because, you know, Rob would say, like, I make one phone call back to somebody and I like help them, you know, get their driver's license application, which is like he would do stuff like that where it's like the province does driver's license. It's not the city, but he would like help them anyway. You know what I mean? And he's like, that person will vote for me that person will tell everyone they know that this happened and they will vote for me forever. And he was like pretty right about a lot of that stuff. Like the Ford Nation people are fucking diehards because of stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Everyone needs to respect that notion that like government should have that kind of relationship with the people that it serves, you know? And like the problem with the Fords is that they don't have a coherent or constructive like long-term plan for what to do with any of this power that they have. Like they have the power and they're going to use it to like sell the fucking waterfront to like some fucking casino company and literally to like make a statue of Mussolini like punching Mackenzie King in the nuts, right? Like this is like who the fuck knows what's going to happen when everything gets privatized. Like we need like, I would just ask the people on the left and anyone who's interested in politics to think about the lesson of what the Fords do right, mm-hmm. and then use it to prevent them from doing the things they do wrong in the future.
Right, right. That touches a little bit on, like, the great discomfort I have with these guys is that they seem, again, like you said, so popular.
Mm-hmm.
For reasons that I can't seem to describe, you know what I mean? And like, mm-hmm. I just look at thinking of their nephew who just got elected, right. And like last city council election, he got elected like by a landslide, and he only made one speaking engagement. Like,
and this is period. And he was elected in the same seat that Rob and Doug both held, and their father held at one point as well.
Yeah, and yeah, seat. I guess this is where I find the most discomfort is when like just sort of. Yeah, political positions get handed down through families and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I get uncomfortable with that.
One thing that I would say is that the Fords have an intense value on loyalty. And I honestly think that, like, their entire governing strategy first is for the people of their riding in Etobicoke. Like everything that they do benefits that group of people who live in Etobicoke and, like, to the massive detriment of almost everyone else.
Well, I mean, that part of Etobicoke has some of the biggest houses in Toronto.
Yeah,
I mean, like, it's the wealthiest, one of the wealthiest parts of Toronto, maybe outside the Bridal Path.
Yeah, that's right.
I think it's kind of split between the two. It's like, it's one of the wealthiest parts of Toronto,
and
but
one
then
of the poorest.
It's also got a lot of the poorest parts.
Like, and they did, like, they're not, you can't crudely paint them as, like, cartoonish racists. They, like, they did a lot of direct outreach to new Canadians and the people who were like, in extreme poverty, in very bad community housing, and, like, I don't think that they significantly improved the lot of those people with their policies, but again, they made them feel that they had a voice. They
yeah.
made them feel that there was somebody who cared about them. And that's how they've kind of built that coalition. But like I think that the reason Michael Ford gets elected, who is Doug's nephew, gets elected so easily in that riding is because those people have their diehard loyalty forever. And they've proved to those people that they're going to work for them. Like, you know, they have those people's trust.
Right.
They're not working for anyone else, I don't think, really, except rich people who give them money. Mm. But, like, that is, like, I don't think it's fully inaccurate to say that literally Doug Ford is governing the entire province of Ontario like a city councillor from Etobicoke would.
Right, right, right. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we'll see what happens in 2 years, 1 year. How long is
three
years?
Three and a half.
Yeah. baby.
Yeah, it's gonna be a long ride. It's okay. gonna be a weird time.
Right, right. What do you think the odds are that I mean, I guess it depends
on
what happens.
That he gets elected again?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it depends on what happens in the next 3.5 years, obviously. But
I think they're low.
Yeah.
You think they're low?
Yeah, I would hope that they're low. I mean,
we're a liberal country out here. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, you'd say that, but Ontario had conservative governments for 41 years straight, and then after the 4 years of Mike Harris, they decided to reelect him again. So, like, Ontario has a lot of conservatism in its blood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's got, and you know, it's also always very oppositional with Ottawa. So if the Liberals get reelected, there's a good chance that Ontario just goes the other way.
Yeah.
That happens a lot throughout history.
I do know that the NDP, who really had a strong platform, I thought, but again, elections are not about having good policy. They're about, you know, telling the clearest story that you possibly can so that when people get in the ballot box, they, like, know who you are and can know what you stand for.
Right, right.
Right? And the Fords do that really well. Like, mm-hmm. you know, back in the day, they had, like, one thing they would say in their mayor elections, which is just, like, you know, like, we saved $1 billion. We saved the city $1 billion. You know, like, that's, like the kind, they would just hammer that one point over and over and over. So people, you know, anyone... Or they would say, it's time to end the gravy train. That was, like, Rob's big slogan when he was becoming mayor.
Right.
And literally, like, the guy who was his chief of staff was like, it's brilliant because, like, they never said what that meant, but everyone has some idea that the city could be spending less money on something.
Right.
And they all assume that's what it meant. So the Fords are really good at that. I think.
And on theme with their lack of transparency, nobody knows what happened to that gravy train.
I know, right?
Every time you looking at the Fords, I think we all have a pretty good idea.
Yeah, there's a room at Deco Labels and Tags that's just like a Scrooge McDuck pool full of gravy.
Yeah.
I assume Doug Ford sleeps in.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I think that part of the problem with actually being in power is that with everything he does, a new group of people who he was like vague enough that maybe he got their vote because they thought he'd like you know, maybe he's a bit of an unknown quantity, but maybe he'll, like, you know, set things more or less in the right path. He, like, loses new voters with everything he does because he's revealed to be, you know, a pretty short-sighted person who governs things in a really kind of fucked up way, you know, basically right. for it's just rich people. Like, it's hard to not look at it on any other way than that, I think.
Huh. Well, great, guys. Fucking great. Yeah, I mean, yeah, okay. Well, that's interesting. I certainly know more. If you guys back home, you listening, not the two men in this closet with me, but if you back home have any questions or comments or anything, please get at us. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Yeah. Just, you know. We've had, like, people write us all the time. People ask for clarifications on stuff. People ask just questions sometimes about politics. And, yeah. And honestly, like the Fords themselves, we've learned the lesson. I write back. We write back to everybody.
Yeah.
Every single person who writes us. So if you do, if you're listening, you have a question, you have a suggestion for a topic, we read them all. We respond to them. Like, and a bunch of the topics suggested by our listeners are the topics that we're going to be covering in the next little while.
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, keep an eye out. Stay active. I want to thank Anthony. Thank you for joining us in the good closet.
Yeah, thanks for having me, folks.
Hey, you're welcome, folk. Until next time, I'm Jamie.
I'm Richard.
I'm Anthony.
And this has been Explain It to Jamie. Woo.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Explain It to Jamie. I, again, am Richard. Once again, we'd like to plug our Facebook, our Twitter, our Instagram accounts. We have all of those things. You can also check out our website, explaintojamie.com. Or email us at explaintojamie@gmail.com. And finally, we have a Patreon now, which is a place where you can donate us a little bit of money every month to help us out with the costs of hosting the show, researching the show, and producing the show. This is kind of a labor of love from us, but your support really makes a huge difference to us, and we really appreciate it. And one of the things, the perks that you can get if you donate to us is a bonus episode every single week, which are finally starting up this week. So this week, we brought a bonus episode about an update to the Brexit. What's going on with the Brexit? Why is everyone so mad about it? Hey, it's about to be in the news a lot. We should all refresh ourselves about it. So here is a tiny little preview of what that episode sounds like. Again, this is the kind of stuff you could be hearing every week if you donate to us on Patreon. So check it out, patreon.com/explaintojamie. Hope you enjoy this bonus clip, and thanks again for listening. So then the second thing, the big thing about the split is what's called the divorce bill, which is basically that, like, Britain owes the EU money if it wants to leave. It has to pay the EU
alimony.
Some alimony, like, yeah. Straight up. And, like, how much alimony is, like, a big question.
And I guess that depends on how many other countries Britain was having sex with while under...
Well, the answer is £39 billion worth.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It sounds like a big number. It's not nothing,
yeah.
That's for sure. It's, like, about 10% of Britain's trade with Europe every year or so. So it's, like, you know... Britain has it.
It's affordable. Like, what's the, I mean, for a country, you know what I mean?
You know what? Britain, you should treat yourself to a nice Brexit every once in a while, you know? Yeah, sure.
It's fucking worth it.
It's got a price tag.
Yeah.
I'm taking out the special Brexit credit card for this one.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We get points towards when we have to leave NATO.